Good morning and welcome to the Tuesday edition of Down to Brass Tacks. Today is the 25th day of February 2020. And of course, this is Carnival Tuesday. Life is a strange thing. There was a time that you would not have caught me dead anywhere other than Trinidad and Tobago on Carnival Tuesday. But here I am on Carnival Tuesday morning, bright and early, in the studio in Barbados, and not drunk and disorderly on the streets of Port of Spain. But I guess that's what maturity is all about. As life moves on, you have to move with it. So happy Carnival Tuesday to those of you who are celebrating in Rosa Dominica, in Rio de Janeiro, in Trinidad and Tobago, in Port of Spain. I believe those are the three places that celebrate Carnival around this time of the year. So any of you others who may be included, I hope you have a great day and enjoy the revelry. And of course, as always, be safe. This morning, I want to do two things. I'm going to have a first call on the issue of the 11 plus, which I imagine you are anxious to speak to me about, as my views on this exam are well known. But first, I just wanted to give a very quick review of the program we had on Sunday, and I appreciate very much the warm response I received from many people about the program, the content, the way it was handled, and the guests, and so on. And by way of review, I was, I would say, happy-ish with the program. I thought that the guests were, for all intents and purposes, honest with themselves in terms of their presentation. My concern, of course, is that I felt that we could have had a lot more conversation regarding the issues with which the Democratic Labour Party needs to apologize. Because while I feel the DLP members seem comfortable in themselves that an apology needs to be tendered, there seems to be some confusion regarding the issues about which they need to apologize. And, you know, I always argue that the only way we can know the way forward is if we understand the mistakes that we made in the past. And I think that by and large, I certainly found Simon Aline was one of the most progressive of the group on Sunday. I certainly enjoyed his presentation, and I thought his presentation spoke a lot to the future direction of the Democratic Labour Party. But I saw the extent to which certainly some of the callers especially were anxious to wallow in the past and to spend time reflecting on the fact that it wasn't anything wrong with what they did. It was just that we just did not understand. We just did not get it. And that confusion persists. But nonetheless, it was, I thought, a good program. And it started a conversation, which I hope will continue. I, like David Ellis, do not support the idea of a sequel because I don't know that we need to look at the Barbados Labour Party in that context. I thought it was useful that we reflected on the progress of the Democratic Labour Party at this time as an institution in and of itself. There will be opportunities for us to review the performance of the BLP as we do every day on the program going forward. But I think that for now, the program should stand alone as essentially a reflection on the Democratic Labour Party, where it is, and the contribution that Prime Minister Frendo Stewart would have made recently and the extent to which that has helped or hindered. So, great program, and I want to thank those of you who participated and those of you who called. And if you have anything that you felt you wanted to say after, feel free to call in and say it today. So, we come now to the issue of the 11 plus, and I was having difficulty containing myself yesterday when I heard Prime Minister of Education, Santhi Brashear, utter those words that this year will be the last year that we will have to endure this torture. I'm excited. I'm happy. I was excited about the idea that it will probably have been the last, and to hear her say that, I thought it was good. It was interesting that no sooner than she sat down or no sooner than she finished her contribution, someone from her same side interjected and said they were happy about the end of it, but they were concerned about the replacement. And her response was equally classic, that we can talk about the replacement, but we'll be talking about the replacement after we end it, which is essentially no. So let's start talking about the replacement, but this will be the last cohort. And I think that that's a brilliant way to put it. I do not agree with Mr. Clark, parliamentarian, who would have argued that there's need for a referendum. I think that that would be a tragic error to put something like that for people who largely do not have a clue about the implications of this exam to answer a question on the exam. And I continue to argue that the reason that we have politicians is because they have to make brave, courageous developmental decisions. And if we accept that there is good reason why we should end the exam, we should end it. There is no reason for a public consultation because you are consulting with people who are completely unaware of a lot of the issues that present themselves, because it is a matter that requires some level of professional expertise. And I'm not trying to slight the views and opinions of the ordinary man in the street, but I'm just saying the ordinary man in the street, who may very well be a medical doctor, does not have a clue about these matters of education. So I'm hoping that we have on the line Mr. Eiffel. Are you there, sir?
Hey, good morning.
Good morning, morning, Mr.
I'm not
Eiffel.
At Carnival.
You're not at Carnival either?
No, I'm not. No.
You would have been at one time?
Probably a long time ago, but not now.
Yeah, why we all of us getting old and perhaps foolish.
But I just think sometimes you as you said, maturity, you realize that there are more important things you can do with the time as you get older.
I guess. But I have a bit of a confession to make, because I had a group and we played Mass for the better part of 10 years from 1990 up to 2000, and then several years after we played Mass intermittently. We have all agreed that we will return to Trinidad and Tobago next year for one final hurrah. So you're welcome
to
join
us.
Seems
to be a lot of final hurrahs of recent.
Because I think at 53 years old, it might not be a good idea for me to be continuing much longer. So next year will be my last foray into the Carnival thing. And I don't know, you're probably younger than me, so you could probably defer that for the time being.
Probably. Yeah. If the parents of the students that I teach here, you they will laugh.
I see. Okay. Yeah, Ms. Eiffel, you are, like me, a person that takes great interest in education. You set up a school that assists many of the people who are unable to make it in the formal system. You provide additional alternative opportunities, and you and I have spoken before about your concerns about this dastardly exam known as the 11+. Were you as happy as I was to hear yesterday that this would be the last year that we would be having this exam?
I was honestly smiling. Ironically, I was informed about it by one of the parents at the Eiffel School, the class three parent, who's very involved in the students' development. And she asked me if I knew. And I said, if I know, as in it is happening, or, and she said, well, it just came over the news. So then I had to confirm, because usually when these things happen, you have to confirm. So I did the confirmation. He said, ah. And he smiled, and I said, finally. Mm-hmm. But we have to recognize that this is a very bold step. This is one of the most significant changes that any administration has done. And it is one that everybody will be watching. It's a hot-button topic, and I am glad that that is what they have said. I agree that the replacement is of equal importance, because it is the type of conversation that parents, students, the average man, they're involved in. Everybody has a view or an opinion, but they have to look at, first of all, why the 11+ exam in its original form was placed in the first place, and then what the exam does, as in it is an allocation exam. And looking at it over the years, and I'm saying this from the perspective of a principal, a teacher, someone who's done lessons, somebody who's marked the 11+ exam themselves, and taught students who either would have scored 90 or 80 or 70 or 40 or 10. Mm-hmm. You know, you see the variance in terms of how people respond to the exam. So I thought the minister was very bold in making that declaration, but also very wise, because the real issue isn't even the abolition of the exam. The real issue is, how are you going to allocate the students to the school?
Yeah,
and that is where I would like to see the discussion going forward. So obviously, they can't do it the same way as it was done before. I'm going to hazard a guess and say maybe they might look at a different type of zoning. My phone has been inundated with messages.
Buzzing with messages about the
Calls, about the exam, because they assume that I know. I said, I don't know. How would I know? But I know that they have to look at it, because some people are, you know, looking at it from the perspective of if they take the student the school that they're currently going to, if they look at the school that is nearest to them, which would be more problematic for private schools like myself, because if a child goes here and they're near to a school, you know, then you may have students and parents looking to change address, and it might be much of the same thing. So whatever they do, they're going to have to be firm about it. It is something that I support, so I want to let the Ministry of Education know that I support it. But I think the most important thing to me is how are you, what is the objective of the program in terms of the education program or the product? We talk a lot about tourism product, but what is the product of a child leaving school in Barbados, primary or secondary? You look at Guyana, totally different model. The average student excels. And then you have a case where you have subjects that you're doing, and then the reality is you only end up doing English, math, and there's less focus on the composition. Mm-hmm. But then you go into secondary school where you have to do literature, mm-hmm. geography, history, and you still have to be able to write an essay.
What you offer now at the IFL Academy is a slightly more diversified menu. You have a lot in common with another school that we have spoken to, Lockerbie, where you offer a student that may not necessarily be inclined towards the English and math that's in 11+. You offer them the opportunity to study other things. And I think you, one of your main emphases is sport.
It is one of them.
Okay. No, I'm not saying that's all, but I'm just saying it's one of them.
No, that's fine.
Right. So I'm saying that this type of model, and what impresses me about that model is that, you know, I always adhere to this mantra that every child is good at something and no child is good for nothing. And, you know, there's a biblical thing that talks about talents, which, of course, you know, that I have a little bit of discomfort with the Bible. But there is certainly a lot to be said for an appreciation that we all have a talent, and mm-hmm. we should focus on just trying to find that talent and maximizing on that talent. And then the other side of it is the fact that I see every day, you know, kids and young children on the street who are doing absolutely nothing simply because they haven't been able to find their talent. And they prefer to just make nuisances of themselves on the road. And I do feel that one of the benefits of a system that we have now is that we can have more schools like yours popping up where we have a specialization and an emphasis on the non-traditional things that can allow a child to do what it is interested in, what it is good at, and essentially become useful to society as opposed to a nuisance to society because they're not an English and math type of person. So do you think then that there's a way that you can be integrated into this whole system going forward? And the Lockerbies of this world as well, you know. Is there space for you guys at the table going forward? Because what you do now is you catch the ones that slip through the net. So if the net is changed and the net is designed to ensure that in a public institution they can offer what you offer, what's the role then for you after?
Well, okay, some people view private schools as competition to public. I've never had that view, which is why most of the programs that we do, we encourage students from other schools to participate. For example, we started archery recently. You can come and try archery if you're doing lessons, if you're on the street. There are people who live in the Hinesbury area community and they come in. But there's a school, for example, like Mr. Morrow's school, Light, and I've said this on record. Light does tremendously well with students who have special needs, and I believe instead of spending a lot of money on other things, they can look at giving grants, providing funding to some of the private schools who have unique programs. For example, they're not looking at after school, as far as I know. Okay, you cannot do everything between 9 to 3, or in our case, 8 to 2. So, for example, every child at the IFL school has to do 2 sports, mandatory, or chess, or draft. If you ask the students that came, a lot of them, they had no motor skills, coordination skills. They never did any sports. We had a young man, Hussein Williamson. He came second in the shot put. It was only introduced this year at NAPSAT. He would have never had the opportunity at the school he was at before. You know, and these are the type of things that we look at. We sit down and we say, how can we help this child become better? Every child will not score 100, and that can never be the aim of an education program. Just like every business will not make millions and billions of dollars. You have to look at what is the objective. And to me, the space for the Lockerbies, the Eiffel schools, is that the government should be able to work with us and we work with them so that we help the students of Barbados. Because it doesn't make a difference if the child is going to Peter Wickham School or Mr. Eiffel School. The product for that child should have been that the child has improved and has learned and has been exposed, because a lot of these children are not being exposed to many things. They still think the classes are too large. We had a conversation here recently about the class size, and we said we do not want it to go past 16. We don't have a class of 16, but in order to effectively do what we do, we need it to be small. In fact, most of the school did NAPSAT. You know, we're doing BSAT. Next year, the class fours will be doing the English and Math CSC in class four. And I've always said that. We look at class four as an end of primary. It is not an end of primary. It can be a continuation of education. That is how the process should work. Yeah. But what do we say to these cigar-filled sobers of the world who may not have been an academic, but was brilliant at understanding the game of cricket? I've seen students pass through the system who, for whatever reason, and despite the best efforts of teachers, have not been able to attain those high expected levels of academic performance. So when we talk about education in Barbados, people continue to refer to academia, the English and the math, but education is simply learning. You are learning. There are different things to learn. And that is what school is about. The motivation for students has decreased. And it's something I was speaking on recently, because students do not enjoy school. You have to make school a place children want to come. If you have a student in front of you. I enjoy school as well.
I enjoy the playing and stuff.
Oh, Peter, man.
And seeing my friends and whatnot.
You did work at school, Peter. You did work.
No. If you spoke to any of my teachers before third form, they would tell you a different story. Largely because of my learning disability, I was a nuisance in class in many instances because a lot of it was boring. And that's my challenge.
You mentioned that too. Yeah. You said because of it, because of a lack of understanding of the issue at the time.
But right, and I think that we didn't understand the issue at the time in the same way that I remember a conversation that took place when I was in primary school about children that couldn't see. And, you know, the teacher's approach normally was that children who were making nuisances of themselves in class, they just put them at the back of the class or beat them. Yeah. What we discovered is that a lot of children who were not paying attention couldn't see the board because they needed glasses. And then they started a program, even back in the day in the 1970s, where they would carry all of us in the school, all, you know, 800 or 900 of us to Enmore to get our eyes checked, you know. And it seemed to have helped in many instances, because when you can see the board, everything begins to make a lot more sense. I'm saying it's the same way where a lot of these issues with people like myself, we couldn't see. And we thought that, you know, Peter is being a nuisance because Peter is a nuisance. But we didn't realize that Peter was being a nuisance, because if you try to introduce something to me that I am not interested in, I get bored. And because I get bored, it's easy for me to throw a rubber or a pencil at the person next to me. And that's the challenge. So I'm happy that we now know how it works. And I think that as a society, our challenge is to find a way to occupy the mind of people like Peter. So that doesn't become a nuisance.
Exactly what I was getting at. The finding a way to occupy the child. Because, you know, the first thing individuals say is that, well, this child isn't learning. Give them a skill or give them a sport. I told someone it is very difficult to learn to play a sport. Like, I'm learning archery now. Archery is very complicated. So you can't just say to a child, go and learn a sport. Go and learn cricket. Go and learn football. Mm-hmm. It takes a lot more dedication to master a sport than it does to master something at an academic level. Mm-hmm. I would dare say that because I've done all two. But the thing is that when the school academic year has completed, then what do you do with the child? And we've looked at it, as I've said before. And, you know, we were criticized initially for our four-term model. Mm-hmm. I understand the ministry may be looking at something like that as well. Because you can talk about the academic year with the Michaelmas year with the three terms and our four-term model. The parents do not have to worry about where do I put the child. The child is already doing something. There are other things they have to learn, like swimming at the ocean. Mm-hmm. But I think we need to try to support what the minister and the ministry is trying to do because nobody will not, you will not have all of the answers. I will not have all of the answers. Peter will not have all the answers. Certainly, Minister Bradshaw will not have all of the answers, which is why she's asking for discourse, discussion on the topic, so that we can find a way to do it. But then you will have those that will come and will just blatantly not accept what is being offered just because Bajans have an issue with change. Yeah. Usually do.
Yeah. I got a couple of comments here. People are trying to find you at the Eiffel Academy. I've told them that you're online. This morning's event was not for you to advertise the school, but for you to talk about education. So they can find you online quite easily.
Yeah, the Eiffel School, just right. Facebook it, and they'll find it.
Someone is asking about the baccalaureate system. If I
have the IB, which Codrington has, yes, but if I remember correctly, it could be wrong, they have that for Barbados. You don't just go and apply to do it.
Right.
But the difference with it is that it has to also be looked at culturally. Mm-hmm. And you have to look at what the students are traditionally doing, because they also do not participate in that NAPSAC or BSAC, a lot of the competitions. And since we have been in the market, the other private schools have not upped their game. We now see private schools entering competitions that they've never entered before. Yeah. Yeah, because they know how to compete.
The other point that I wanted to make was this one. I was asking about the baccalaureate system. Somebody else is saying, Mr. Wickham, I hope your name is spelled correctly, whatever. How can you abolish a system without having a clue what you replace it with? This is like knocking down a house and then trying to achieve a loan to purchase a new one. How will sending a child to the nearest school guarantee that he will excel? Whenever you do some, will excel and some won't, because everyone is different. So here I have a perfect example of someone who cannot spell the name Wickham, which is quite sad. But more importantly, is more concerned about this idea of a replacement and has accepted, because implicit in that statement is an acceptance that everybody is different and some will excel and others won't. I do not accept, and I completely reject that as absolute nonsense, that some won't excel. I think that our willingness to accept the fact that some children would just be dumb is the source of the problem that we currently have in Barbados today. Because
agree,
we determine dumbness
100% there.
Based on that nonsense that takes place at 11 and a half, and that's the determination of dumbness or intelligentness. I think that there's a better way. I don't know about you, but I personally think that this idea of saying, let's wait to see when Jesus Christ will come before we make a decision that we believe in God, it's not making sense.
Well, you have to do work regardless of if you knew if he's coming or not. I mean, these are just straightforward things. But, you know, when you get into these topics, you know, you get into trouble. But the reality is you can't sit down. It is much like I said to the student, if you want to be good at something, you have to put in the work. Yeah. Just saying you want to be good won't make it happen.
Well, you know, I'm on board with you, and I want to thank you for being the first call this morning. I'm sure that we're going to have a lot of very active conversation today about this issue, and I don't know if we may need to call on you to come back again later in the program.
I will come in the studio, and this time what we will do is that we will bring some coffee. Because I have to be there in that same studio tonight for lyrical interpretations with Ken Hudson.
Oh, you're
going
to be there with Ken
Hudson. Right. Yeah, he's going to ask me about the same thing.
Yeah, all right. Well, and I look forward to listening to you tonight. And again, thank you for responding to my invitation. I continue to do what you do. I have spoken to parents just recently who are having some level of anxiety, and I have frequently referred persons to speak to you regarding the idea of an alternative way, because you know they understand that the 11 plus is going to do some damage, and they're looking for an alternative way. So like you, I hope that we may very well soon be in a situation where there are less people demanding that alternative way, but in the meantime, I'm happy that you are providing these opportunities. Mr. Eiffel, thanks so much for calling, and we will continue our conversation in the not-too-distant future. This is Down to Brass Tacks. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Down to Brass Tacks, 434-1790. Say good morning and welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Peter.
Hey, Sandy, how are you doing?
How are you?
Good, good. Wait, Sandy, your thing wasn't on the 23rd?
No, it's next March, Peter.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. And you were to call me and you did not call me.
Sandy, I told you I don't have your number. I asked if you could WhatsApp me so that I could get your number, because I can't seem to find it.
And secondly, mm-hmm. you know that the common entrance was my baby 12 years ago.
No, but it's not untrue.
You understand.
You and I have been in agreement. It's not only Eiffel, but...
I am not Mr. Eiffel. He was smiling. I was like in awe. I couldn't even speak for the day when I heard. Because it's a dream come true for me.
It is, yeah.
You understand? Yeah. And I have to plug it. That's how God works.
Yeah. No, you have invested heavily along with him. And several others, I would say that you certainly have invested a lot of energy in trying to get this thing.
I am now considered miseducation.
Yeah. No, that's okay. A good thing.
No, I have thing. 2 points I need to make today. Sure. First,
you can make three if you want.
Yes, thank you. First, I am saying, one, I'm happy that the ministry has heard people like me with a common entrance. What I'm a little beefy about, though, Peter, is that a lot of the practitioners are not called to the table. All right? And I am a person, if you're going to put a pole in my yard, I think you need to consult with the people who are going to be living around that pole. Am I right or wrong?
Yeah. Agree. Right.
I am not seeing, and I think I've told you this many times and on other programs with other moderators, the people who have the passion, Peter, and who have maybe the answers, solutions, because that's what you want. Don't call into the program to ask. Come with a solution. They do not call these people to the table. And that is my beef with the ministry. And I don't make any apologies about that. The practitioners, they are not in the ministry teaching. Call the people who are teaching, the word is practitioners, to the table. Because it has to be well rounded when it's finished.
But Santia has given you that opportunity because over the next several months, we will have conversations about alternatives, and I am assuming that persons like yourself will be up front and center.
I do hope so because I don't want to hold because I have been holding my breath for a long time.
Hmm. Okay? No, I get the impression that this is a different day. Santia Bradshaw is a special person. You know she went to foundation, right?
Yeah. Because you went to school with her.
No, not <either. laughs> She went to school after me, but it was the same school. But no, seriously, I think that she's a special person. My sense so far is that this government has shown a willingness to make difficult decisions and essentially to crack the whip when necessary. And I think that's what she's doing. To me, this is a revolution in education that is no different to the revolution that brought the 11 plus in the first place, because at the time it was necessary. I think that right now, it will become the same leveler. Ending it will be the same leveler that started it, if you understand what I mean. Because when we brought it in, it was about creating a level of social equality. Because there were limited facilities, and we wanted to create an equal opportunity for everyone to get access to those. So it was a leveler at that point. I think that it has outlived its usefulness, and it has now become counterproductive. What I think ending it is doing is essentially leveling the playing field again. And the opportunity is there for persons like yourself and Eiffel, the lady from Lockerbie, and certainly a lot of other practitioners, as you say, that essentially are on the cusp of this thing to influence government's hand going forward. And she clearly will listen.
Well, I am looking forward to that day.
All right. No, man, it's going to happen.
One of the things I want to allude to Mr. Eiffel, one, he is correct when he speaks about private schools, Peter, are here to stay.
Mm-hmm.
Some people might not agree with that, but private schools are here to stay. My thing is the allocation is what I'm also concerned about after. And I would not like to see a situation, Peter, where we have this elitist thing. You understand what I'm saying? The elitist situation where you, and I'm talking about now and mm-hmm. before, all the years before, you get into a certain school, but your parents do not want you to go to that school for whatever reasons. Because that happens in Barbados.
And they put you in private school.
And they put you in a private school.
But Sandy, we can't avoid that.
No, I'm not saying we can avoid it. I'm just saying I am hoping that whatever is the outcome of whatever we come to, that does not still seep in.
Sandy, because that is an unintended consequence of our system. It's going to happen. It's going to happen more.
But then forget zoning.
No, but Sandy, the challenge I've always had is private schools in Barbados do less well than private schools in other Caribbean countries. And the reason that private schools in other Caribbean countries do better is that many of them don't have an 11-plus system, and you have a cumulative system of placement. People want to be elitist, so they put their child in private school. In Barbados, you don't have to put your child in private school to be elitist, because ultimately you have an elitist system that government pays for. What I like about the new system...
Not anymore.
Right, so I'm saying if that changes, and I don't care if you send your child to private school, you can send your child to school in the moon, just don't let me as a taxpayer have to pay for it. So I am not worried about the children of wealthy parents, because I know they will get through. I am concerned about the children of parents that don't have the money to send their child to your school,
right,
or to Eiffel's, or to Lockerbie.
Right, that's my next point.
So, yeah.
I hope I'm going to also see a situation where those children, I think it's way, are included, because, Peter, as you say, not all parents can afford that system, the private school thing or the private school lessons. I would like to see those children, and that is why sometimes we look at our social behavior in this country with children, and that those are some of the reasons why. I work with children, and I'm telling you, when children do not have numeracy and literary skills, those things seep in, the deviant behavior. And I want to see whatever system or whatever decision that they have made, when the time comes, that those children are included. Because I met a lady this morning at the gas station, and she gave me her woes of issues with her child having been to 3 different primary schools.
Wow.
And up to now, she doesn't know what the problems are. Those are my concerns.
Because she wants the child to be able to read and write,
yes, but
at a certain level, no?
She only knows that if somebody told her, and you know I tell you this all the time, we do not have an effective
diagnosis,
evaluation system and diagnostic testing.
But the system isn't meant to be diagnostic. The system is meant to be punitive.
I did not. No.
Of course it is, Sandy. It's meant to be punitive.
Yes, but Peter, okay, tell me what that lady should do then.
No, but Sandy, I have spoken to people like her in recent times, a lot of them. And I have usually said to them, speak to you, speak to Eiffel, or alternatively, you can consider Lockerbie. There's several places you can go
but
for
Peter,
help.
You see, you go back to what I'm saying. A lot of people don't know.
Right,
in life is about knowing or not knowing.
Right, and which is fine. And I think that we now have the opportunity for a national conversation that some people can listen to. Sandy, I have noticed that whenever I raise these issues on the radio, invariably I get calls in the afternoon from people who are saying, but you know, I was thinking about something, but you know. And to me, that's great. That's great. And, you know, I do have a parent who I've referred several people to that struggle with this issue of dyslexia and can speak to people and say, look, you know, I mean, this is what I had to do and this is what the best options are. So it's a support system that we need to get in place. And I am, you know, I'm happy to contribute to it. So, but the system, unfortunately, is flawed. If we can get to a stage where the system is able to deal better with diagnostic tools, developing diagnostic tools, and can diagnose problems early, and can help to treat these challenges as we go forward, I think that would be great. So I'm saying the opportunity is there for a conversation. You have a minister who is willing to listen and who has the intestinal fortitude. I note I said intestinal and not testicular or ovarian.
Yes, I agree.
We are being gender
non-specific. She is a caring person. I have
right.
to agree
she
with
has
that.
The intestinal fortitude to say, look, let's just crack this whip now and deal with this issue. And it is going to be controversial. And this is the perfect time to make controversial decisions because you got all the seats.
So
Peter, the naysayers will have to fall in line.
Peter, so we are saying then that down the road, that the children who are left behind in the big classroom settings, something will be done about that.
I imagine so. Years ago, Erskine Sandiford made a point. And I mean, in this conversation about the 11 plus, we can't forget Sandy. Because when Sandy was Minister of Education, you will recall that Sandy first set up the Barbados Community College with the intention that sixth form education will be done there and only there, which essentially was a leveler in relation to all the secondary schools. That was revolutionary in those days, in the 1980s. So I'm saying Sandiford was part of this revolution as well. And what Sandiford made the point, if government is going to spend $200 educating you per week. Me. There's no reason why government needs to spend $200 at foundation. The government can spend the $200 at your school. Mm-hmm. So the idea of embracing the idea of private education, and his point was always, I don't see why if I'm going to spend $200 on you a week, should I not give the $200 to you and say to you, okay, well then take the $200 and give it to Sandy and let her give you the education because the state doesn't pay anymore. And maybe it might even be cheaper for the state because the state doesn't have to saddle itself with paying Sandy's salary and whatnot. So there is a balance that can be created between the public and the private.
I think, Peter, there can be a better balance. I personally think my gut is that private schools should be subsidized. And I'm speaking from my own individual feeling. Nurseries, okay, should be subsidized. This and this has, I mean, we spoke about this like in David Thompson's time, and nothing was done. Mm-hmm. Okay, and I really would like to see in 2020 that we look to subsidize the schools. And I have to bring up the point where the Child Care Association, a lot of them, I think you maybe heard it yesterday on Brass Tacks, that some of them might have to close in 9 days because of town not having town and country planning permission. I've been through that all my life. Okay, so I know what I'm speaking about, Peter. Okay. That is not fair. Mm-hmm. First of all, these systems are so way behind and antiquated that you have to wait. Thank God the police certificate of character, now you can get that in bulk and you can get that quickly. If you don't have a fire inspection, if you don't have a town and country planning inspection, if you don't have your police certificate, you cannot operate. Mm-hmm. If you don't have your health license, you cannot operate. That is not right. These systems need to be upgraded so that when I come for my police certificate and I take the fingerprints and so on, I should not have to wait 6 weeks for a police certificate of character. Okay? You go back.
You should have to wait 6 hours.
No answer. Sometimes you don't even wait 6 hours. Sometimes you don't even see anyone. Mm-hmm. I'm saying those systems are outdated.
They are. Yeah, they are.
Because then you are asking the person to run an effective system in their school. And I really am putting a plug for the people who run nurseries and preschools that something is done for them that they can continue running their businesses and don't have to close their businesses because of a piece of paper. That's what. Bringing me to my next point, Peter. Mm. I had the joy, I don't know if you call it a joy, of traveling on the yellow minibuses for a week because my car was in the garage.
Okay.
And I'm traveling from St. Peter to come to work, the town. So when I get on, the bus just has on maybe two or three people. Well, lo and behold, when we get to certain bus stops by schools, certain schools, there are like 1,000,000 children getting on the bus. And they are allowed to get on the bus by the conductor. I sat down in the bus.
They don't pay to get on the bus?
Well, I don't know, because there are like so many thousands of them. You can't see who's paying or who's not paying.
Yeah, because and they shouldn't be.
First of all, when I get on the bus, because I don't sit in the back, because I always was told by my father, never sit in the back of anywhere. Sit to the front.
Is there a blue bus service, a government bus service?
Yes, that's what I'm coming
to
know.
The transport, okay.
That's what it brings me to my point. So I sit in the front, and well, from the time the 1,000 children get on,
music?
The behavior starts. The driver who I'm sitting next to is changing the dial on the radio to put on the lyrics that the children want to hear. Mm-hmm. And they're singing every word. And the words, the lyrics, I will not tell you, but you would know what kind of lyrics. And they're calling names of schools. Mm-hmm. Oh, the girls in down in so-and-so hall, in Peter Wickham's hall, they like this and that. And it goes on, dirty lyrics. Okay? And the children are, of course, enjoying it because they're waiting for that bus to get on. Now, in the meantime, there are maybe two or three of them on the bus who are quarreling, want to fight. And I'm seeing this with my two eyes. This is not what nobody told me, Peter. And I sat on the bus purposely because I want to see the outcome. Because the children are cursing, the conductor is cursing too, cursing them. The driver then is telling me, "Mom, excuse my language here. he's telling me this.
And then he cursing too.
He cursing too, right? So the children cursing, the driver cursing, and the conductor cursing. There were four tourists on the bus, Peter. And I noticed that they were saying, put me out, put me out. They could not tolerate
the behavior.
Because when the lady was getting, I said, why are you getting off the bus? Is this your hotel? She says, no, I can't deal with this. Right? First of all, Peter, when the conductor is cursing, the music is loud. You stop at another bus stop, and there are four children from a particular organization who are supposed to be in this organization to learn values and behavior. Okay? Because they have on the uniform.
What is youth service?
Correct. And as a girl guide, I know the uniforms backward.
Mm-hmm.
They are at the bus stop wanting to get on the bus, but the conductor has a beef with them. So he is cursing them on the sidewalk. In the meantime.
What's the beef he has with them?
Well, there was some story down the road from before. I wouldn't know. But this is what the fellas were saying. And then two of the fellas were cursing. And you know, pointing fingers, you know, the behavior to the conductor. Don't let me say you pass me again. I got David and all of this. And I'm sitting at the front, in the front seat. So I'm seeing and watching everything with my eyes brawling open. So the bus goes on and they're cursed because I'm getting off now when the bus stops in Baxter's Road where every 1,000 children get off. Well, I turned and I told the driver, you really think that I should be paying $350 to deal with this kind of thing and this behavior? And you as a driver, you are part and parcel of it? He said, ma'am, no disrespect. Sorry, you were the only respectable person on the bus. Sorry for all of that. But I am sure that you must be some kind of teacher. I said, yes, I am. I said, but you know what? I am going to report you.
I hope you did. That's the question I was about to ask. Did you report your matter to the licensing authority?
I said, you see, people like you, if I had owned this drive my bus, neither could you put on that music, neither that conductor could not have a job. Y'all need to go home and sit down.
Right. Now, Sandy, we've been talking for a while. This matter was reported to the transport authority?
Yes.
Okay.
Whoever the
has been the outcome?
No, I don't know. That's why I'm telling you about why I really called. My beef is, Peter, you all this talk we had about minibuses last year, what has happened? I am not seeing anything.
I know, but Sandy...
Changed.
Sandy, we've been on for a while, so we're going to need to come to an end shortly. But I'm just saying, look, the only way we are going to be able to deal with this problem of this kind of behavior on the buses, and I was laughing, but don't think that I am amused. I'm laughing because this is embarrassingly ridiculous that this is still continuing.
So when is
these matters need to be reported to the Transport Authority, and the Transport Authority needs to be equipped. But no, but I am saying the only way the Transport Authority can act is if they have complaints upon which to act.
No. People don't come to me with that. The authorities don't have to get a complaint from me 15 times because there's about 15 times I've complained. I am saying nothing is being because the people in charge are not putting it under the carpet. And Peter, I make no apologies about things.
No, you don't have to make apologies because the behavior, to start with, they may have no right on the bus. They did not have any right on the private transport to start with. And my thing is that once you go on public transport, the kind of music that you play and whatnot needs to be music that is suitable for all ages. I don't have a problem with somebody enjoying nasty lyrics, but that's not the forum. And certainly not in the company of children. And minibus operators need to understand that. So I'm saying, Sandy, that I think that the reports that you make, you need to note date and time. And perhaps we need to have a program at some point in time where we bring the Transport Authority onto this program and we say, look, you know, because unless you can shame these people or alternatively put them out of business, it's going to continue. You know, I think it is distressing. I mean, it is good that the guy actually apologized to you because there are some of them that wouldn't apologize to you that would stop the van until you get out. So at least he had the decency to understand that what he was doing was inappropriate. But that's not the way that you be speaking to people and children in a public transport environment. And I just don't get it. So, Sandy, we need to have a record of those complaints. And we need to have some kind of understanding from the Transport Authority about what do you propose to do with these vagabonds, you know? Anyhow, Sandy, we're going to have to run. Sandy, can you please send me a WhatsApp so that I can get your contact information? Because I have a number of people who have been asking to reach you. I myself need to reach you. I know that you're having an event on the 23rd of March, which I plan to attend. So please, let's open the opportunity to have a conversation. So if you can either call me or send me a WhatsApp a little later, I'd be much appreciative. We're going to have to take a break. Come right back with more of Down to Brass Tacks.